What's up, everybody? This is What's Up Wall Street. I'm the host, CJ Email. First, I wanted to mention the LSU Incubator Program. I talked a little bit about it in the podcast, but I wanted to say that it's an awesome program that really helps students and enables them to create a business opportunity. They have business consultants on staff, people that can create prototypes for you on staff. It's a really awesome service, and I think every student should check it out if they have a business idea or want to pursue an entrepreneur career. So my guest on the podcast today is Natalie Noel. She's a successful businesswoman with an interesting background, and that's what we went into a little bit in this podcast, just how she developed into this entrepreneur. And she also gave some really good advice near the end of the podcast for students and young professionals out there. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoy it. This is What's Up Wall Street. So Natalie, I really appreciate you coming in today.
I'm excited. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. I think it's super interesting, all the things you have going on. Just looking up, and of course, being an LSU, you're an LSU grad, it's super interesting to be able to connect with people like that, especially for mostly my audience, who's students. I wanted to kind of start with your background and how, you went through school.
Sure.
and your ideas during school, kind of what you thought you were going to do at first.
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up playing basketball, and for my entire life, I wanted to play college basketball. So that was all I had on my mind growing up. And then I got to college. I got a college scholarship to play basketball for UL Lafayette. And I went back and forth between a few different degrees, but I said I settled on marketing. And I'll never forget this, that my mom said, "Well, you're not very creative." And that really pissed me off, because I'm like, how could you just shoot me down like that?
Right.
So, of course, I went into marketing. And
and then you became
eventually creative. Found my way that I'm actually kind of creative. So
nice.
Go mom. But so I went full into marketing, to business, really fell into that, really felt like that was my groove, made A's on all of the business classes. I was very, very committed to it. And I knew that I would eventually want to get an MBA, and I knew during school that I would want to at some point have my own business, but I did not know in what area in college.
Yeah, I feel like that's the most difficult thing students battle with, especially business students.
Yeah.
They think, oh, I really want to own a business one day and I want to be an entrepreneur, but they don't know what they want to do. And it's disheartening in that way, because you've already tried to solve what you want to do in school, and then now it's like, okay, now I got to figure out what I'm going to do after school. And that's the hardest battle, especially with being an entrepreneurial like mindset, where it's like, I don't want to settle for a job. I want to do something greater. What was your, because I know that you started in the career and you were doing sales mostly, right?
Right. Yeah. So I would just say, like, looking back, if I were to change anything about while I was in school, I would have gone for the most amazing internships, not putting at the time stamps on an envelope and calling that an internship. That was garbage.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
right.
You've got to get you got to get some really good experience, and you need to find a company like one of the companies I have now. I mean, when we have an intern, we let them do all kinds of different things, because that's what you need. You need to see what you like, what you're good at, and then really get a taste for it. But I guess to answer your question, when I got out of school, I was sales. Because at the time, marketing was, what was marketing 15 years ago?
Right.
I mean, it was just like.
It's definitely changed.
It was just like, maybe, you send out a mailer.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just not something that, and then it didn't seem like there were a ton of jobs. So I went to the sales route and formed my skills that way. And then I found a software company, or I was referred to, and then that's how I just got lucky. She changed my life. I was talking to a fellow named Taylor, and he said he met someone who changed his life early on, right out of school. And this woman changed my life.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so go into that relationship a little bit, because I know that y'all have kind of built a few companies, right, with that relationship.
No, this woman was a mentor, a professional mentor. And I think that's one of the biggest things, is if you can find someone early on in your career. And so she owned a software company. Her name was Patricia. Well, it's her last name, but I mean, her name was Patricia. And she was a rock star. She could go into any business. She could listen to what their problems were, and she could tell them 15 different ways to solve it. And as a young 22-year-old, I'm just in awe of her, thinking never will I be able to understand this everybody's business the way she did. And she did a profound thing for me. She asked me what I thought. And she was the first one to say, what are your thoughts? You know, and I think, like, right now, I can't stand when they talk about millennials and all this and that. I mean, like, if you have a voice, if you have, you know, something to say, like, you should say it, but make sure it's backed up by by facts.
Yeah, especially with the millennial argument, because I feel like the older generation, the generations are looking down on millennials and saying things like, oh, they don't want to work, oh, that, you know, they're lazy, or you know, it's just insane, because we're literally creating a culture, especially like with Snapchat and all these different just applications and technology. We're just literally transforming the way business works. And I mean, I can only really talk on the business end of it, because I'm not sure how it affects other industries, but I know for the business world in particular, like, millennials are definitely making an impact.
Yeah, I think I'm the beginning of it, so I'm the oldest millennial, I think we are. I think that it's just a matter of, you have to be patient. And I think maybe some millennials get a bad rap because they're like, I want it right now. Yeah. And not everybody has that bang, like that tremendous idea that, okay, you deserve to get this promotion right now, or you deserve this, your idea to make you a billionaire.
Yeah, and that goes back to kind of what you were talking about with, you know, coming out of school, going into a sales role, exploring your I guess, options as a marketing student or marketing graduate, rather, and then looking for those opportunities for businesses. And so we're, like, I feel like as a college student, at least I did, and I know some people that I would talk to, it's, you think you're going to graduate and you're going to have it either A, all figured out, or B, you're going to be making so much money you don't even know what to do with.
How about this for you?
Yeah.
So right out of school, and I graduated in 2005. So right out of school, I said, okay, I'm going to move to D.C. That's where I'm going to go.
Okay.
So I moved to D.C.
The most expensive state.
Right. I moved to D.C. and I'm doing these interviews, and I find this advertising company, and I go there, and I'm doing sales, and somehow I accepted this position, and I was going door to door. Well, I had a college degree, my ego all ready to go, and I'm going door to door, and I'm selling garbage. Yeah. I mean, just.
And you're like, I can buy a brand new car.
I'm like, this is ridiculous. But I learned really well, really quickly how to sell. And that's, it was cool. Rough. And I heard no a lot.
Yeah.
And so I think that, I mean, there are some benefits to doing some garbage jobs right out of school. And then you find, hopefully you find that person or that company where you can find yourself and you can start to grow and add to your skill set. And definitely. I mean, that's what Patricia and that software company did for me. It gave me confidence. It gave me experiences. I got to go to conferences. I mean, just little things like that. I mean, that started. That was the foundation.
Yeah. And then, so as far as, you know, where you are now, with the few companies that you have now, go into kind of the CRM company a little bit, because I mean I don't think a lot of people know, maybe not in the business world, not maybe someone who's like a sophomore in college might not know what a CRM
they probably don't
is, so.
they don't do a good job of that. Well, CRM is customer relationship management software, and it's a software that's designed to help companies keep track of all of their accounts, contacts, sales opportunities, and so it's for sales teams. And so I've been doing that for 10 years, but at my company now, Tech Advocate Group, we implement sales and marketing solutions. So marketing has a automation system, something called HubSpot, and we integrate those two. And then we also create content marketing. We're a marketing agency, so we do digital marketing and all of that. But I think what sets us apart is we add the technology to the marketing and the sales teams.
That's brilliant. I mean, especially with a company that, you know, like we said before, with trying to figure out how do you go about marketing in this day and age. So clearly, you know, going to you guys is a certainly good move.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I think so.
Yeah. So you can't, you
know, do we have clients that, have been with us for a while.
Yeah. So. Could you give me an example of a client? Not their names if you don't want to, but just an example of what you did for them.
Sure. I mean, we go in pretty deep with our clients. We have a mortgage company, so we've designed all of their digital marketing, so their web presence. Now we're doing, and we also work on their recruiting, so they're trying to grow nationally, so we're helping them find national recruits. So we're taking care of all of that, as well as like their content writing, graphics,
there you are. We have the little picture pulled up on their website.
Yeah. Look at me.
TechAdvocateGroup.com. Interesting. So,
and we've evolved. I think you're going to eventually ask me why I started this company.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, we evolved, which is the name doesn't necessarily fit where we are today, because when I started this company, I worked for another custom software company, and I was the COO, and we were responsible for creating custom software applications, and I really fell in love with software development. The idea that you can create something from scratch to solve anything, to create anything, you know, to really have an impact on a particular business, or in a lot of cases, like a lot of the apps we use today. So I really felt like I fell in love with that. But then I started to see how we were just not doing a good job. Like, the software was never being finished. If it was, it was full of bugs, and it was just not really good quality work. And I didn't particularly care for the way that they treated their employees. They were the owners of this company. They just weren't cool. They weren't good. And so I learned a lot of what not to do. And so that was why I said, okay, if they can do it, I can do it.
Right.
And so that was why I called it an advocate group. I really wanted people to come to me, and I would help them find software companies or software developers or marketing agencies or whatever that could get the job done.
Yeah, and so with your experience in software, I mean, I feel like, definitely weigh in your opinion on this. I feel like software is being integrated in almost like every single industry, especially in business, because it, like, even in finance, as analyst jobs, you're having to really dig deep in software knowledge. You have to really know your way around software.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think it's at this point you are interacting with a piece of software almost at every turn.
Right.
I mean, it just makes you more. It makes a business more efficient. You can do more with less. You can take out the mundane task and automate them with software. Like on the sales side or the marketing side, you can't possibly touch every prospect. So if you can create content and have it drip through automation, and how, depending on how someone interacts with it, they get another piece of content, it just really takes takes all of the extra legwork out of it.
Yeah, that kind of goes into like blockchain, right? And like how that interacts with the market now with really, I mean, these companies are creating these blockchain technologies, and it's really just, like I said, more integrating software into business. It's super interesting. Do you know much about blockchain?
To be honest with you, no.
No?
No.
No. It's super interesting. It's
check it out.
It's a pretty big world, and I feel like I could pretty much have a podcast on only that alone. So I'm not gonna go into it that much. But it's definitely a subculture now. I mean, with cryptocurrency and blockchain intermingling in that way. It's super fascinating. But I wanted to touch on the healing soul, because I know that that's something I really wanted to talk to you about. And is that integrated in any way with Tech Advocate Group?
They're one of our clients. So we do all of the marketing for them. So the deal with the Healing Soul, I got my MBA from LSU executive program in 2010, so 5 years after I graduated college. And in the program, I met an orthopedic surgeon who is an Air Force veteran and is a foot and ankle surgeon, and we hit it off, to say the least. So she had developed a concept for a flip-flop that would treat a very painful condition, a painful heel condition called plantar fasciitis, and that will affect 1 in 10 people in their lifetime.
Wow.
And if you haven't had it, good for you. But if you have had it, you know it's one of the most painful things on the planet. You can't hardly walk. Yeah. It feels like needles in your feet. Jeez. But the thing about it is there's not one solution for it. There's no one way to treat it. And so she really wanted to do something about that. So I worked, we joined up, worked on getting it, getting concepts. So all the way from the prototyping phase through finding a manufacturer, working on logistics of getting it shipped here and packaging and marketing and all the branding and everything end to end. You know, we worked on that for years, and finally end of 2015 we had a product in hand, and we had 3,000 pairs of flip-flops.
And what's the next move to, for like now, like what is
now? So we have
next goal, I guess I should say.
Oh yeah, so we've had some product iterations, and we've made some changes to it, and we have a new one coming, like a new design coming out in the next few months.
Sweet.
I mean, we can go anywhere with it. We can do closed toe shoes and things like that.
That's what I was thinking.
We can do other designs. We can do other add-ons. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna need those.
If you think of the funnel, right? The click funnels, right? Yeah. Have different things that people can take part in.
Yeah, I feel like I'm gonna be needing those in a few years, because I have like really bad flat foot, so that's probably gonna be something that I'm gonna need. But yeah, and so as far as like an age group for this, have y'all been seeing it's mostly like the older generation?
Yeah, I mean, it's if you are an athlete, it doesn't matter. Okay. So like if you're a runner, oftentimes runners will get this. So it doesn't discriminate in age. So you can be super old, not old. You can be overweight, skinny. I mean, it's just sort of one of those things where it just comes on and you want to do whatever you can to fix it.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. And then how do you guys are marketing this currently? Is it just the website? And
so you can buy it through our website. You can buy it on Amazon. We have relationships with physical therapy clinics and a few retail shops like running stores, mm-hmm. soccer specialty stores. Tennis would be something we'd like to get into. But and then we're really trying to find those influencers that have an audience that are talking about these things and getting them to touch the product, feel it, and then talk to their people about it. But to be honest, I mean, the best way to boost sales has been through PR.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just getting other reputable news outlets to write about it.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, Facebook advertising is a big spot for us.
Yeah, I feel like making some type of interesting like video ad that really, which I'm sure y'all have done, where it just kind of shows how it affects the person. I mean, it's saying here 80% reported improvement in pain.
Yeah, we did a clinical trial.
Wow.
And we had about 40-50 patients inside of the trial, and 80% of them reported improvement in pain and our function. So, I mean, we have a lot of the pieces in place. We have a lot of videos, but we don't have that. We need to create more videos.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just never done creating content. So.
Wow. Yeah, and with the closed toe shoe, that's really interesting, because you're then entering a pretty competitive market. Because, I mean, like flip-flops, yeah, definitely. As a competitive market, but then closed toe shoes. I mean, then you're talking like, I mean, are you really trying to go for style there? If you're trying to change people's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean that's
a weird.
It is weird in that we are not shoe designers,
right.
So at this point, style is we try to think about it, but I mean, right now we're just trying to solve the problem.
Yeah, because this is, I mean, this is a huge issue, like you're saying. So it's, and 1 out of 10 people get it. So it's kind of like, you know, how much should we focus on style whenever it's something that already works?
We have prototypes of a closed toe.
Yeah.
And it is not cute enough to put out on the market. So to some extent, we are worried about how it looks.
Of course.
Because we have a whole box full from our manufacturing partners that look like they should not be for sale. So so we're working on that.
That's so interesting. I mean, that's I can only imagine how difficult that is. And so you were saying with, and so now going into kind of your third kind of endeavor, I mean, that's mostly just the angel fund, right? The angel investment fund.
No, I would say it's our Noel Family Distillery that we're getting off the ground distill vodka and gin and rum.
Party.
using the sugar cane.
Wow.
Juice in our cool. in my hometown of Donaldsonville.
Whoa.
What? Yes.
Holla.
So right now we don't have, right now we're really in the early stages where we have a building and we haven't even released it, so
That's still cool.
Say anything. No, I'm just kidding.
That's still cool. That's a pretty brilliant idea. And so it's just going to be located there, and then y'all are going to try to distribute out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are a few other companies around doing it, and you know, in Baton Rouge and other areas. But as far as the world, I mean, there are only so many places that you can get access to the sugarcane juice because it has to be processed within hours. Otherwise, it starts to ferment on its own, which is way technical here, but. Anyways, yeah. so that gives us our competitive advantage if we're going to use this natural raw material, which is the cane juice. And so what if there are a couple of other brands around here using it? I mean,
yeah,
you can throw a rock and hit a marketing firm or an orthopedic surgeon. So we're not scared of competition.
That's
in fact, I mean, really our competitors would say like some of these bigger brands like a Bacardi or something, you know, not the other local companies.
So. Yeah, that's true. And then that's so brilliant though. I mean, I think really using a resource that is local, people can connect to it in that way. It's like, oh, sugarcane, you know, it's right down the street.
Yeah.
You know, sugarcane plant. So it's kind of, that's really interesting in that way. And then how would you brand that? Are y'all going to brand it as your family name?
Yeah. So I was hoping you would ask. That is actually like a really big challenge.
Yeah, just like
is because all of the cool names that you
taken.
Could think of are taken, and then you don't want to get too off the wall that it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
so
and then you're just like, yeah,
we've branded the distillery at this point. So we have gone through our team of our ownership team. We have gone through quite a few names and we have still not agreed on anything. At this point,
I mean that there's so much there. I mean, I feel like with the creating it, branding it, and tasting it. I mean, it's gonna have to have a certain taste. You're
right.
Gonna have to make
something. We don't even know what it tastes like yet because this is something that happens after.
Yeah.
Like you really, this is the dumbest business to go into because you have to buy the building, you have to buy the equipment,
yes.
you have to
you
get permitted,
the yes.
then you can make your product.
Oof.
So, yeah, you know, we'll.
Certainly,
I would just say, like, if you're in college, find investors right now
yeah.
that you can form relationships with, because if you have big dreams, you're going to need big funding.
Yeah, for sure. Which is kind of goes back to that entrepreneurship program, which anybody listening, definitely go check it out. It's a really interesting just setup where they're giving pretty much business ideas and business products out to students to build a business around it. And but one big thing would be funding. I don't know how that program really backs it in funding, but I like that you went into that kind of transition because that's kind of exactly where I wanted to go as far as advice for students. I know that you went into saying getting a mentor, but like specifically, like how would you go about getting a really quality mentor? Just networking?
I would say definitely say networking, but one thing I do caution to just kind of puts up a red flag for me is with someone like giving you a business idea.
Yeah.
That may sound great. You may have the financials. It may make sense. It may make you a lot of money. But if you are not curious about it.
Or driven to it.
Driven or you are really not solving a problem that you want to solve.
Yes.
I mean.
I agree.
You're definitely just, I don't know, but I would think like just taking a chance and that doesn't seem authentic.
Right.
You're just kind of. I would just say be authentic and certain and do something that you're curious about. But more importantly, I mean, think about the business model. I can't stand the startups that, oh, we'll just sell some ads or we'll figure that part out later.
Yeah, it's like, you got to figure that part out
come
now.
Come on.
You got to figure that part out now. But, I mean, as far as even a young professional too, someone that maybe is even like in an employee, like works somewhere, like you were kind of the VP of sales, right? Like you had somewhere that you started before you started these endeavors.
Right.
If someone has a really good idea and is looking for funding, like what would be some advice for that person?
I mean, definitely you want to get a sense of, you should have like your pitch down. You should have a pitch deck. I mean, you should be ready with really pertinent information. Like, what are you doing? What's the market? What problem are you solving? And it doesn't have to be like this huge document. I mean, having an executive summary or having something that has that information, like a one pager, is better than not having anything at all. Yeah. And so, I mean, if you think that you want to do this, I would network. I would talk to different people. Maybe have a trusted circle that you can bounce these ideas off of, and talk with people who will not just tell you what you want to hear.
Right.
You know. And then at the end of the day, what's your gut say?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think you can make it work?
Yeah. Do you want to work a 9-to-5 job for the rest of your life?
Right. Do you want to? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that if you do.
No, there's not. But I'm saying that there's definitely people out there that just go to work every day and think, oh, man, like I could run something myself, and I'm doing this for someone else, and I'm working for someone else, and you know, quote unquote, making someone else rich. But you know, it's more than just making yourself rich.
May I interject that you probably, maybe in some cases you are making them rich, but not every company is profitable.
Of course,
that is paying you.
Of course.
So that, I mean, you have to think about those.
Of course,
like people should think about those things too. I mean, I wouldn't say go start a marketing agency. It's not the most profitable business on the planet. I mean,
but I feel like even if you're not searching for the money, like if you're wanting to start a business just for, you know, the hell of it, you know, like I just think you it's okay. Like I feel like if you're just super interested in creating protein shakes, then it's like, do that. Like if you're interested in, you know, writing a book, like write a book. I don't know. Yeah, and the freedom of just like the autonomy, the overall autonomy of, you know, breaking out of that mold, I guess.
You should do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and then if you can write it, if you can have a podcast, if you can just start talking about your idea, I mean, evangelize other people around you. I mean, all of those things will play an important role. I mean, you don't have to have a ton of money to start a business. You just have to have an idea, solve a problem, have passion, and then just hustle.
Yeah.
Hustle.
It's about the hustle.
Yeah.
And then what's your, I mean, that's what's so awesome about this incubator program.
Oh, and a work ethic. That
work
helps.
Work ethic, yeah,
I
of
mean,
course.
That helps.
Yeah, you're not going to, you know, own a business while you're sleeping, you know, 12 hours a day. But I'm saying, like, so with the incubator program, I know y'all have some type of affiliation there, right? Because you're just...
Here at LSU?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so we started both companies here in the building over there.
Cool.
On this, and Charlie D'Agostino was a big help for us. We actually have our inventory here for the flip-flop. It's just an opportunity to have some resources, have some support, and people to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think that's an incredible resource for students, too, because, I mean, we use it. And I think a lot of students that are business majors, as far as I know, and the people that I talked to when I was in school, not a lot of people know about this program even, which I think is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure even people locally that want to start businesses don't know about this program. So I think it's definitely networking, and then also just getting out there too. I mean, it's getting out there, seeing what's out there, understanding that there are opportunities, like startup communities like this one. What is this? Startuprev.com?
I think people tend to overthink things.
Yeah,
they do. And I have a person on my team, and his job is to just make sure I don't overthink things, to create content, to just get it out.
That's so true.
He used to talk me off the ledge. Natalie, yeah. You're thinking too much. Just put the content out there. That's just genius. Start.
Yeah.
You know, just do it. I mean, people get in their head too much and they make it seem like a big idea. Like, oh, I could never talk to so-and-so at such and such company. If you're a college student, you could literally figure out anyone's email address.
Yes.
And then you could email them. Mm-hmm. And you could request a meeting over coffee. And you could pick their brain.
Yeah. I've done that plenty of times.
Again, you can figure out anyone's email address. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is a couple of different combinations.
Yeah, or like LinkedIn profiles.
Or LinkedIn. There you go.
That's what's so crazy about this generation that we live in, where literally anything is possible because it's all at your fingertips. You know, before you'd like really have to work for the information that you get, libraries, encyclopedias, you know, or, you know, figuring out someone's name and who they work for and like what they're doing. It would be impossible almost if you'd have to go door to door.
I wish I was a college student right now. Yeah. I mean, they will, like, you have LinkedIn, like they will respond to you. Any executive will respond. I mean, unless they're just being a turd.
Yeah.
I mean, like everybody wants to help a younger kid.
Yeah,
you know, and then
for sure.
Everyone should take advantage. I wish I would have.
Yeah,
I wish I would have been more into reaching out to other executives when I was younger, because you could find out so many different things.
I wanted to ask you this question too, because I think it's something that gets brought up a lot, and just the news even, or you know, times have changed, and women in business is a real thing. I mean, that's something that
They let us out of the house.
They let us out the house, right? about damn time. And so I think it's awesome that we have this movement to where there's so many more women starting businesses, and they should. I mean, it's like, it's so awesome that it's encouraged now. But I still feel like there is some type of like fear, maybe, or maybe some type of hesitation
on, like, the part of other women.
Yeah, I mean, what do you comment on that?
Yeah, what's my thought? I feel like I'm a very strong woman. I've surrounded myself with other strong women. My mom is super aggressive.
That's awesome.
She wasn't necessarily like a business person, but she was not going to take anything from anyone. So I don't really relate to women having excuses and why they are not where they want to be, or for that matter, anyone.
Yeah.
I mean, either you make it happen or you don't. I don't see like your gender, or your race, or anything like that should have I mean, I know it exists, but for me personally, I've not seen it. I've not experienced it. I don't think about it.
That's awesome.
I mean, if I want it, I put my mind to it, and I'll do what I can to make it happen.
That's awesome.
I mean, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I feel like a nobody, but, you know, I certainly walk around with a little bit of confidence.
That's so crazy to me. I mean, like, yeah. You think of the average person, like I said before. I mean, the average just employee somewhere. I mean, to hear that you think you're nobody, but you're doing all these things in the business world, I think is, it's funny. It's certainly funny. But yeah. The reason why I said that is because I feel like, especially, maybe it's a Southern thing. I don't know what it is, but I feel like there's not as many business graduates that are females in the business school as there are men, and there's not as many female entrepreneurs going into the business world than there are men. So it's like, what's going on there? And then also what we talked about before is the income inequality.
Yeah.
Or the income gap, sorry. The wage gap. That's like another conversation that we've had before. And that's something that I always think is super interesting, because it's something that I don't know.
I don't have like a wage problem, but with like pricing, yeah. I think women are, at least from my perspective, I tend to think way too much. I think try to think about what everyone's thinking and feeling,
yeah.
And like, what are they going to think about my pricing? And so every time I go to price something, I always say, what would that guy prize? Because I don't want to prize like a wuss or like a female. And so I try to think of that. And totally. I always try to go up when it's appropriate.
Yeah, you know,
I always
try
to increase it just a little bit more to see what the market will bear.
Yeah.
And to make sure that I'm not overthinking it or I'm not selling myself short.
Wow.
But there's a ton of work out there by other women who are, you know, writing about these things, you know, that had their experiences. I mean, I think you just have to put yourself out there and go for it.
For sure. And it's, you know, it's something that I want to bring up because I think there should be just like a motivation towards women getting in business, because I feel like, you know, there definitely is some type of hangover from the past where, you know, we oppressed women.
It's really probably like a lot, like if you think about the way that we raise kids. I have two kids. I have a 3-year-old girl and a 10-month-old son.
Oh, nice.
And I think like what I expect to see, or I hope to see, is like we talk about business, we talk about technology, and I think they're trying to do that in schools early on.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that should play a role in helping more and more women get involved in those things, because it won't just be about princesses and stuff.
Yeah, princesses.
Just don't really relate to that, but
that's true. Well, this was really interesting. I really appreciate your time and you coming in. I know you're super busy, so
cool.
Thank you for it.
Appreciate it.
All right, till next time. What's up, Wall Street?